from Portland, Oregon, where APA Compass Radio, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio show. Find podcasts of our program, apacompass.wordpress.com, or contact us on Facebook. Thanks for listening to APA Compass Radio.
Thanks for listening to APA Compass on KBOO. I'm Sari Gametha. Ishmael Bea is an author and humanitarian with a unique past. He spent his formative years as a child soldier in his native Sierra Leone. His memoir, A Long Way Gone, brought him prominence for this issue. He has since published a novel called The Radiance of Tomorrow, a fictional account of going back and showing the hopeful side of people who have survived the war. He stopped in Portland on his tour and met me at Powell City of Books, where we talked about his survival and hopes for the future of Sierra Leone. Well, first, thank you for chatting with me from KBOO Community Radio, especially just as you got off the airplane and you're about to have a book talk right now. So thank you very much for joining me here.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
This latest book, as you mentioned, is a novel. Your first book is a memoir, and the second one is a work of fiction. So before we delve into the how and the why, what is the story for our listeners?
Well, the basic story of the novel is called Radiance of Tomorrow, and the idea of the novel is really trying to look at how people return to places that have been devastated by war. How do they learn to live together? What traditions do they repair? How do they move towards the past when the future is still pulling at them? And what do they hold on to in the most uncertain times of their life? What it is that they preserve? And what does that say about them? So you meet characters who have come from different aspects of the war, but all going back to the same town to try and live together again. And can we really go back to what people have had when they go back to try and repair their lives? So I ask some of these questions in this novel.
Talking about going back after war, have you been back to Sierra Leone after coming here?
Yes, I've been back many times. I go home quite often. And the writing of the novel came from that observation as well, in the sense that, you know, oftentimes it's the case, no, actually, there's a strong interest in when countries are collapsing, when there's bloodshed, but as soon as it ends, nobody talks about it anymore. But actually going back is this most difficult challenge, you know, and that can determine whether the country go back to war or not. That's really where the idea was coming from, that lack of interest in really knowing what happens to people when they go back.
So what does happen, and what are some of your experiences going back after being settled here?
Well, when you go back, people are returning from different places. Some may have gone abroad, some may have been in refugee camps in another country, some may have been running around in the country itself. And everybody goes back to their own communities, but there's a hesitation that comes with it, because when you go back, you don't know what to say to the next person. Some of your neighbors, in this narrative particularly, some neighbors had been soldiers and they had hurt some others, and now they have to live with them, so have been amputated. Some have returned with children that they've given birth to towards the end of the war. So it becomes very tricky to really talk to each other deeply. And also everybody is trying not to open the wounds of anybody, you know. So, for example, before the war, you would greet somebody in the morning with elaborate gestures by asking, how are you, how is your family, how is your daughter, how is your grandmother? You don't ask those questions anymore because you don't know what they've lost. And if you do so, you would tap into a place that they're trying to forget. So all of these hesitations are there initially. And then how do you repair all of that? How do you slowly learn to be yourself again in that environment, you know? And why do people go back to start with, you know? Because people do go, you go back to your home because it's your home, but why? You know, so I ask these questions.
I think you had mentioned that talking about what people have experienced and perhaps what they have lost and these very tragic stories that often people want to forget, or we assume people want to forget. But I think you had mentioned that, especially in your experiences and other children who have been in these situations of being soldiers, that they've gained some skills that maybe they shouldn't forget. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, well, one of the characters in the novel, actually, I created this character particularly to highlight the issue of, is a former child, one of the former child soldiers who returns. His name is Cornell. And when you're in the war, when he was in the war, he's gained some skill sets, you know. And so when you come out of a war, people always expect that you should just forget everything and you should sort of start afresh. But the thing is, first of all, you cannot, because you can't forget the war. And secondly, not everything that you learn during the war is necessarily bad. Now, the way you learn them is bad, and nobody wants anybody to learn things that way. But for example, it builds your character. To survive war requires intelligence, a lot of intelligence. And you can use that intelligence to actually live. Discipline also. When you're a soldier, you're very disciplined. You can use that discipline to study. I did that myself. If you're asked to sit somewhere and guard a post, you do it with your life. If you bring that same enthusiasm and dedication to reading a book, you would do it very well. So you can refocus some of the things that you've learned during the war. Your sense of observation heightened when you're a soldier. So when you walk around, you pay attention more closely to things than other people. So that can be very helpful as a writer. You know, so there are things that you can refocus, you know. And anticipation, it's a great character that any human being should have, you know, for various reasons. And so all of these things, you know, and so the idea I tried to play around with in this novel was to show that, you know, this can be refocused and used positively for someone's life and for the life of their community even.
I just think it's incredible. Do you talk about these issues when you go back to Sierra Leone and meet children there? Or what are the kinds of things that you're teaching those children?
Well, I never try to, because, again, the thing is everybody does it differently. For people to recover from war, everybody has their own way. There are friends, for example, of mine who never want to speak about the war. That is their own way of recovering from it, and you respect that. So whenever I talk to young people, whether in Sierra Leone or in Colombia or Central Africa or Congo, wherever I am that I do this work for, I always just try to explain to them that, first of all, you've survived, and that is remarkable of its own. Life will still continue to be challenging in so many ways, but you can surpass that challenge because you've already come out of war. So you're strong more than you can know it. Because I try to remind them of that. When I came from the war, I realized that your intelligence can be belittled when you're coming from a war. As a former child soldier, when you're named, given that title, people will think, well, what you're capable of is only violence. Maybe you're not really, you can't really think deeply for yourself, or you don't know what you really want. And all of these assumptions are made. Sometimes it can actually dull the spirit of some of these young people. So when I go, that's my main message, to tell them, you know, like, You have something to give, you know, for your life and for where you are. So just don't let anybody belittle you.
And then moving forward, when you came to the U.S., you were about 17?
Yes.
You had gone to the International High School and then off to Oberlin College. Given the life that you had, how were you able to relate to your peers and classmates?
Well, it was actually very interesting, because when I was in high school, for example, at the United Nations International School, I didn't say much about my background. Not because I was ashamed, but I didn't really think my peers would understand. And it was not a conversation that you could have with somebody during lunch. You know, I needed more time to explain certain things. But I got along with my peers. I was a very quiet and observant young man, and a lot of people in high school are trying to be tough, and they have other issues that have already, you know, that weren't my issues anymore, because I'd come from something that was worse. So I always used to find everything funny, and that did upset a lot of people, because I just thought some of the things that were the worries of young people, they didn't really need to worry about. But who knows, if I grew up the same way they did, I probably have the same worries, you know. So I didn't judge them. What I did, I just laughed, because I was so satisfied that where I was, you know, there were books in schools, there was a library you can lend a book from, teachers were there to teach you these things that I didn't have where I came from. So for me, they were very, very amazing. And so it was that sort of thing. And oftentimes, even some people try to pick a fight with me and things like that, and I would just laugh, you know, because I just thought everybody had this sort of bravado, you know, particularly young boys, they had this bravado that they were tough, they were this and that, and I just laughed because I knew those are the ones who did not really know what violence is. They had an idea of it, but they've not really experienced it or actually lived it. You know, so that's why everybody who has that bravado about violence, they don't really know what it is.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. Well, then moving forward as an adult, when you had published your first book, your first memoir, A Long Way Gone, and then the second one, The Radiance of Tomorrow, this involves looking into your experiences that you had as a child. At that point, had you kind of pushed them out or they were still there? How did you cope with and how was the experience of writing these stories?
Well, the experience of writing the memoir was very difficult. First of all, when I started writing the memoir, it was never my intention to publish it. I was just writing to keep it for myself and to prepare myself for if I had a time, say, at the UN panel, to be able to say something very succinct but with enough detail. So I never intended to publish it. Now, later on, I decided to, and I published it in the form. But when I was writing, it was very difficult because it was the first time I allowed myself to go into those memories. Even though they were there, I didn't allow myself to go into certain places because I knew what they would do to me. So writing it, I had to relive it again, and to the point that I began having the same nightmares and the flashbacks. So I walk away from it many times, and sometimes I didn't even want to do it. But I'm glad in retrospect that I did. Because after I was done, I learned things about myself, actually. I learned about the experience just by allowing myself to go back into it again. Something that I wouldn't have been able to do if I didn't really write, you know.
And then why did you choose to create the second book into a work of fiction?
Well, first of all, I'll be honest, which I don't think is healthy to write two memoirs in a row, in my opinion, because then you speak about yourself for a number of years. I think it can become quite exhausting. But also, secondly, is that I wanted this story that I write, it's fictionalized it, and it's fiction because I imagine certain things, and also because I created characters that are either observations of multiple people that then I made into one. But also I wanted it to be an exploration of me trying to be in the shoes of other people. You know, for example, imagine what it would be, what it's like for an elder to be returning after war and having seen children in another capacity. How do you cope with that? What would it be for a man who is amputated but has children who have also been amputated? How do you function in that society? What do we mean for a young woman who has given birth during war and now carries that child post-war? How do you relate to that child? So I was able to imagine some of these things and think about them, even though I'm coming from the other side of the war, you know. So for me, this was something that could only be done through fiction because I don't know those experiences firsthand, you know.
And so how did you relate to those experiences? How did you get those stories?
I talk to folks I observe. I'm a very good observer. So I observe folks and I talk to folks, but not in an interview format because the culture is not of such. You know, if I went and was like, oh, I'm going to interview you for a book, then right, it would not work, you know. And so what I did, because I speak the languages and I'm a local, so I would just talk to people and observe. You know, I go back to my village quite a lot and things like that. So I observe things. And also in other countries as well, I observe things that have similar situations. And then I try to make something of it, you know. And some I imagined, but the grounding of it is based on observation and talking to people just in conversation.
How has your community received your books?
Well, not everybody in my community can read, but for those who can read, they're in my country, I would generalize in my country particularly. For the first one, I don't know if they have. The second one came out like 5 days ago, so I'm not sure they have that one yet. But the first one, what I learned when I went back to Sierra Leone was that a lot of the young people who have come out of the war, and generally people in Sierra Leone, were happy about it because they felt that somebody from the experience was writing about it and that they really wanted that because they could see themselves in the story and the voice because it was somebody who lived it, not somebody who came and interviewed some people or maybe experienced it from afar. So they were very proud of that, particularly when it became successful. They were very proud that I was giving context to what had happened. Now, there are military commanders and who were not very happy about it because to them, they saw it as an indictment of what they had done or what they didn't fail to do and all sorts of things. You know, some of them said, oh, you gave away our secret, which I didn't really do. But anyway, so they had their own interpretations of it. They didn't want people to know what had happened from somebody who was there, you know. So for them, it was a problem.
Did you have to face repercussions because of that?
No. I mean, I just had, they just were angry and they said something, oh, we didn't like the fact that you did that. But that was about it, you know. I mean, there's nothing they can really do. And I said, well, if you don't like what I write, why don't you write yours then? You know, if you're, you know? Of course they know it's the truth, but anyway.
I like that.
Tell us about the Ishmael Bea Foundation and how our listeners can get involved.
Well, the Ishmael Bea Foundation is something that I created after the first book came out because I was thinking that, you know, I am who I am because I received certain opportunities that were granted to me that allowed me to go to school and discover myself and what I can do. So the idea really came from providing opportunities for young people coming from war to be able to take charge of their lives. So what we do is that we fund young people to go to school from primary school, secondary school, and university. We've had a few graduates now in Sierra Leone, and we give seed money for people to do entrepreneurship and things like that. So, of course, we need money to run the program every now and then, but also we need mentorship. So, for example, if there's a young person who's running a small business, if somebody has a business skills and idea, they could become their mentor to teach them how to manage money, you know, how to put money in the bank and all of these things. So it's not just funding. There's also skill set that can be learned, you know, and things like that. So we have a website. We're online, so people can reach us and see how we can work together.
Thank you so much, Ishmael Bea, for chatting with me for KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was author Ishmael Bea, and the book is The Radiance of Tomorrow. You can learn more about the foundation at beahfound.org. I'm Sari Gametha, and you're listening to APA Compass on KBOO.